Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Well, we've reached the point where one really must ask, is George Santos even his real name? After all, the new United States representative for New York's 3rd Congressional District has introduced himself in years past as...
So my name is Anthony DeVolder. I'm a New York City resident. I've recently founded a group called United for Trump, so if you guys want to follow, that would be awesome.
That was from a 2019 event encouraging gay New Yorkers to leave the Democratic Party. Or maybe his real name is something else. In a 2020 event, campaign event at the Queens Village Republican Club, a confused moderator took a stab at...
Folks, another important speaker, another congressional nominee, George Santos. George, who we know as a friend, and he's known as Anthony DeVolder to me. So I don't know where George Santos came into the thing, but that's what it says here.
Well, he's also gone by... George DeVolder, and on an official financial disclosure report submitted to the clerk of the U.S. House of Representatives on May 11th, 2020, under the cell that calls for filer information name, he submitted George Anthony DeVolder Santos. But there's a hyphen in between DeVolder and Santos. So maybe we should be referring to him as Representative DeVolder Santos. Or maybe that's wrong, too. The congressman's former roommate, Gregory Maury Parker, told CNN's Anderson Cooper this week that he knew the rep by yet another name, Anthony Zabrowski.
He used Zabrowski for his Friends of Pets United, his GoFundMe. And he would say, oh, well, you know, the Jews will give more if you're a Jew. And so that's the name he used for his GoFundMes.
After all, George Santos... a.k.a. George DeVolder, a.k.a. Anthony DeVolder, a.k.a. Anthony Zabrowski, has also claimed he is Jewish and that his grandparents fled the Holocaust.
My grandfather fleeing Ukraine in 1920s to Belgium, then fleeing Belgium to Brazil in 1940. It's a story of survival, of tenacity, of grit, as we like to call it.
However, Jewish journalists have unearthed records that seem to show his grandparents as having been born rather far from Ukraine. Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, to be exact. But surely, the congressman wouldn't lie about his education, because that kind of stuff is really easily checked, right?
Today, I stand very proud with the bachelor's and master's degree, all New York educated, Baruch College and NYU for my MBA.
Alas, no. Neither Baruch College nor NYU have any record of Santos ever attending. Okay. It seems like we could play this game forever, right? But it's not funny, is it? Because here's a man who, in the final cosmic stroke that slayed the gods of irony, is now serving on the House Science Committee. He's representing people in the halls of the most powerful nation on Earth, the government of the most powerful nation on Earth. He's going to get access, presumably, to the nation's secrets. He's going to make decisions about trillions of dollars of your money. And he doesn't even deny, not fully at least, that he's a serial liar. Congressman George Anthony DeVolder hyphen Santos has admitted to embellishing his resume. Just a, quote, poor choice of words, he told the New York Post. He, quote, stated things poorly. He's sorry, he says, but, quote, I'm not going to make excuses for this, but a lot of people overstate in their resumes or twist a little bit. I'm not saying I'm not guilty of that, he said. Come on. I mean, this isn't embellishment. It's a wholesale disrespect for the truth. It's fabulism without consequence. It's serial lying. So how do people get this way? How do people gleefully torch any connection they might have once had with the truth? And what happens to all of us as a society when those folks amass influence, power, respectability, and the people and institutions around them do nothing? Look, I know. We have asked these questions before, not just in recent times, but decades, even centuries past. But it's time to ask them once again. So let's start with someone who knew about George Anthony DeValder hyphen Santos long before the rest of us did. His name is Grant Lawley, and he's publisher of the North Shore Leader, a local newspaper on the North Shore of Long Island that's covered Santos since he declared his candidacy for Congress in 2020. Grant, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. It's great to be on.
So do you know what his real full complete name is?
I think his real full name is George Anthony DeValder Santos, and that's the name that appears in his criminal file in Brazil, where he's wanted for stealing checks from an 82-year-old home health care patient and then forging checks and buying merchandise for himself.
Okay, so the Brazilian government has officially identified him as a criminal. When did you first meet him?
You know, I met him 3 years ago, almost exactly 3 years ago, when he was first a candidate. He wanted to meet with me because I had actually run. I'm a Republican. I had run for U.S. Congress a number of years earlier, and he was looking for my support, and he was looking for the newspaper's support.
Okay, and how did that first meeting go?
He was a weirdo. It struck me right away that he was a very weird guy. He was not a serious candidate, and I didn't come away with a very positive impression of him.
Okay, to be fair, being weird is not necessarily criminal in and of itself. I mean, sometimes I'm weird too. But beyond that, as you kept looking into his, you know, his claims and the things he'd said, what did you find?
Look, right from the start, he was bragging about his great wealth. He was bragging about his assets that it turns out he never had. It's wealth he never had. I mean, those were lies. But right from the start, and I sat down and had lunch with him for about an hour and a half, it was clear that something was off with him. And we have a local newspaper, and we would hear stories back from people who would meet with him or he would talk to, and most of what he did was brag about himself, and he would put other people down. Sometimes he would put them down to try to make an impression that he was somehow better than them, and that seemed to be a real problem he had, but he would brag about mansions that he owned in Oyster Bay Cove or in the Hamptons that were complete fantasy. He would brag about money he had and Maseratis that he had that were complete fantasy. And he put on a almost ridiculous act. We saw it. We heard about it. We were very skeptical. But remember, when he ran in 2020 and then 2 years later in 2021, he was what they call a sacrificial lamb. He was not a serious candidate. He was running for districts that were Democratic-leaning districts or strongly Democratic districts. So he really had no chance of winning. He was a marginal token candidate. And people didn't take him seriously, at least people in the political world didn't, because they didn't think he had any chance of winning.
Grant, though, you have to remind us what he did. In fact, I can't even say remind because I didn't know this. But when he actually lost, as you said, that 2020 run that he made for Congress. But what did he do?
Look, in 2020, he did nothing. He raised very little money. Except at the very end. But he raised very little money. He ended up losing by 15 points to the incumbent, Tom Suozzi. And then he immediately declared he wanted to. Well, the first thing he did, which was bizarre, was he, while the votes were still being counted, he declared that he won the election. And then he went down to Washington to participate in freshman orientation for the newly elected members of Congress.
That is so utterly bizarre. I mean, it's one thing, obviously, we've had precedent and people just claiming that they won when they didn't. But then to show up as if you've actually, you know, you get to wear the pin is... It stretches credulity.
Well, look, there was a moment right after the election when none of the absentee ballots had been counted, and there were 100,000 ballots in that election. It was 2020. When he was a couple of thousand votes ahead in an interim count, he took that opportunity to go down to Washington, proclaim he had won, and then he attended classes. And, you know, this, the election hadn't been decided or declared yet, but he went, attended classes with the many elected members of Congress. And when the vote tally was final and it, he had lost by a very substantial 15 points, you know, he was no longer welcome at those orientations, but he went down there to participate.
Huh. Okay. So you mentioned money. Can you, I have to admit, I'm quite confused. Did he have any money or did he not?
Well, it's very clear that in 2020, he did not have any money. And we watched him locally. He would show up at different events. You'd see him bouncing around the events. We, the North Shore leader, we had not endorsed him. We endorsed Tom Suozzi in 2020. And again, we're mostly a Republican newspaper, but you know, Suozzi was a far more credible candidate. And so we endorsed him. And the vote, and Santos was actually very angry at us. And from that point on, would not speak to the paper or any of our reporters, which if you're actually, if you're a serious person running for office, you would never do. You wouldn't shun important parts of the media.
Yeah. Well, I should say that in that 2020 filing that is available, it's publicly available from the House Clerk's office, he does have a giant zero there when it comes to assets. In fact, the whole page is just full of zeros. But yet he was telling something completely different. So we just have a minute here before our first break, Grant. Can you just tell me quickly, like, how is this all going over with people in the district?
Look, people are furious. They feel they've been conned. They've been bamboozled. And they are very angry. And really, almost everyone, Republican, Democrat, everyone wants him to resign.
Huh. Okay, so Grant Lally, publisher of the North Shore Leader, hang on here for just a minute because there's a little bit more specifically about Santos that I want to learn from you about. And then we're going to talk about with a researcher who focuses on understanding pathological lying. So hang in here with us. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking with Grant Lally. He's the publisher of the North Shore Leader, a local newspaper on the North Shore of Long Island that's covered George Santos since 2000, now Congressman George Santos of New York. And in a few minutes, we're going to turn to a researcher who spent years trying to understand the mechanisms that get pathological liars to become the way they are. So we will focus on that in a few minutes. But Grant, the details as they continue to emerge about all the things that Santos has lied about are quite astounding. So I'd love to get more of those stories and analysis from you. Like specifically, he was telling people in New York that he owned, you know, mansions in the Hamptons and in North Port and Oyster Bay. So for people who aren't from there or familiar with that, like what's the significance of those specific locations?
You know, these are places with multi-million dollar mansions, you know, huge homes on multi-acre lots. And Santos would claim that he had multiple mansions, and he did it to try to impress other people who had money to give him money. And he did it to try to pretend that he was part of that world and that society. I mean, he pretended he was Jewish, and he was quite open. He said it was to his roommate at the time, but he claimed he was Jewish, and he wasn't Jewish, to go to wealthy Jewish finance executives and to say, give me some money, please. And they often would. So it was a grift, it was a con, but it was one that often worked.
Huh. Okay. Now, You had said earlier that in his first run in 2020, he was considered a non-serious candidate. So maybe people didn't pay all that much attention to him. Is that a fair analysis?
That's absolutely right. Yeah.
Okay.
But what happened, and this was a very interesting thing, it's not widely appreciated, but in 2022, he was again running as a sacrificial lamb, a throwaway candidate, someone who couldn't win the seat, but was running to promote his name or for whatever personal reason he had. But it wasn't to win, because there was redistricting in 2022. And the state legislature, which is all Democrat in New York with a Democratic governor, drew a very gerrymandered map that took this district and made it into a what they call a D plus 11 or 12 district. It went into the Bronx and Queens, and it really wasn't a competitive district. Then this was the reverse bait and switch. He's already on the ballot as a sacrificial lamb candidate in a district he can't win. Then the top court in New York State threw out the map in June, just this past June, and assigned a new map for New York State for all the congressional districts. And that changed this district from being a hardcore Democratic district into a marginally Republican district.
It became
so suddenly
okay.
The sacrificial lamb was the nominee for a district that you know, most Republicans could win. And this was a red wave year in New York, particularly on Long Island, because of Lee Zeldin's candidacy for governor.
Right. Okay. So then it becomes a competitive district. But I understand from your reporting, and again, hats off to local journalism, right? Because the North Shore Leader, you know, as you're laying out here, had been reporting on Santos for quite some time. So people had to pay attention to what their local journalists do. But I understand that, you know, his lies and his misdirections and his fraud were actually pretty well known, as you say. And that, did he even have a nickname amongst Republicans there? Like, they were calling him George Scamtoast. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I mean, within the district, particularly on the North Shore, people who were more active started calling him George Scamtoast because his lies were so ridiculous. And he was always scheming. He's a con artist. And like many con artists or grifters, they try to implicate other people and bring them into the, you know, or at least bring them to some degree into the schemes to neutralize them and to compromise them.
Okay, there's a question also. We keep coming back to this money, and he has some kind of connection to a Russian oligarch.
Well, he got, and people don't know the why. That's the magic question, is the why. But he received $56,000 and then probably more into a PAC that he was running, but from a man named Andrew Intrader, who's the cousin of Viktor Vekselberg, who's one of Putin's oligarch cronies, who's under massive international sanctions. But for some reason, these people gave $56,000 and more to George Santos.
Okay, so we have yet to discern what that reason is. Well, look, let's listen to things that people are now coming forward with regarding Santos. We heard the voice of his former roommate, Gregory Maury Parker, a few minutes ago. He was on CNN, and he also told Anderson Cooper not only about the lies that Santos said, but that Santos stole a Burberry scarf, a shirt and scarf from him in 2018.
The Burberry scarf, I think the reason why it bothered me so much was because my best friend Danielle had given it to me on the anniversary of my grandfather's passing.
I understand he was actually wearing something he took from you at a pre-January 6th rally in Washington?
The scarf? You can believe this. He has the audacity, yes.
Wait a minute.
That is
He's wearing the scarf.
A stolen scarf. To a steal the election rally.
Well, Grant Lally, there's also, I mean, it seems like this is not the first thing he's alleged to have stolen. You had mentioned Brazil before. Tell me more about that. Grant, you still with us? Okay, we're going to try to get Grant Lally back because That is a reporter with a ton of interesting information, so we'll try to get him back on the line. So, okay, I promised to you that we were going to talk about exactly how pathological liars get this way. And by the way, journalistically, I'm going to say that we obviously on this show today feel quite comfortable calling Congressman George Santos a liar because he hasn't denied it. He has said, as I read in that statement that he put out earlier, yes, he embellished parts of his resume. So turning now to Christian Hart. Christian Hart is a professor of psychology at Texas Women's University, director of the Human Deception Laboratory and Psychological Science Program, recently published a book titled Pathological Lying, Theory, Research, and Practice. Professor Hart, welcome to you.
Thanks so much for having me, Meghna.
Okay, so how would you characterize George Santos's behavior?
Well, what I know about him is from what I've read in all the popular news sources. Obviously, he's a fabulist. He's a liar. He's admitted to lying about many things. And there's very clear evidence that he's lied about numerous aspects of his biography and his background, many of the things that Grant was mentioning. So when we look at people who are pathological liars, which is a topic that's been studied from a scientific perspective since the 1890s, we can kind of hone in on a few key characteristics, but the main one is they lie frequently. The lying oftentimes causes dysfunction in their lives. It causes rupture in personal relationships and professional relationships. It often leads to distress in their lives. They suffer consequences, put themselves at risk. And their lying seems to be compulsive as well. So George Santos seems to meet many of these criteria.
He seems to meet many of these criteria. Okay, I want to understand then more how, kind of the structure of the lies and what's going on in a person's brain when they do this. So let me play an example, Professor Hart. This is a clip of Santos during a debate in 2022 with his Democratic rival for New York's 3rd Congressional District. The Democratic nominee was Robert Zimmerman. And they both appeared together on CBS New York's The Point with Marsha Kramer. And Kramer asked each man to name a favorite family tradition. And Zimmerman answers first.
New Year's Eve, my nephews and I, my brother and sister-in-law, and I get together in our sweats, watch a stupid holiday movie, some sort of stupid comical holiday movie, and eat the food that we shouldn't eat all year round. So that's the great thing. It begins with delicatessen, it goes into Haagen-Dazs, it's always a staple, usually popcorn as well.
Mr. Santos, your favorite family tradition?
Our favorite family tradition is just family time. We've always been, it doesn't matter if it's a Tuesday night or if it's a Sunday night or if it's Christmas. Every moment we can get together, that's kind of a downtime. It's sweatpants, pints of Haagen-Dazs all over the place.
Professor Hart, Robert Zimmerman says sweats. George Santos says sweatpants. Robert Zimmerman says Haagen-Dazs. George Santos says Haagen-Dazs. What's going on there?
That's pretty entertaining. What happens when people are lying is they obviously can't state the truth or they don't feel comfortable stating the truth. And who knows why George Santos felt uncomfortable talking about how he celebrates the holidays. But when we start looking for lies, what we typically do is we look for easily accessible information. And so if I have to lie to you about what I did yesterday, an easily accessible story would be, well, what I did the day before. That's easy to recall. In Mr. Santos's case, it seems to be that maybe the case is he just grabbed on to the story that was told prior to his. That was the easily accessible story.
Okay, but what then is the difference, though, between, the ordinary fibs that one might tell versus this serial behavior that we are seeing with someone like Santos?
Well, when we look at lying, we think of it like this. People lie when essentially three criteria are met. First is they see some upside or some utility to lying. So people don't lie randomly. They lie when there's a purpose. And so if they identify some purpose or something that can be gained, they'll lie. The second criterion is they see the possible negative consequences of lying as tolerable. So usually people lie when they think they're going to get away with it, or if they believe that if they get caught, it's not going to be that big of a deal. And then the third is they can morally justify their lies. That is, they can live with the fact that they are lying. And so when people meet all of those three criteria, we tend to see higher rates of lying. And when they don't, we tend to see lower rates of lying. So for people like George Santos, what we can discern is he probably sees a strong upside or a utility to telling all of these fabulous tales that he's telling. He probably believes that he's going to get away with it. That is, he's not going to be detected. Or if he is going to be detected, he can get out from any negative consequences. And then thirdly, he probably has a psychology that allows him to morally justify his lies and see himself as still being a worthwhile and good individual.
Huh. Okay, so we're going to come back to that. But regarding the upside, it's hard to argue against his belief in the upside because he's sitting in the United States Congress now. It's a pretty big upside. But it looks like we have Grant Lally from the North Shore Leader back. You with us, Grant?
Hey, yes, I'm back.
Okay, sorry about that. The internet still does not behave as our friend, as we would like it to. So I did want to just give you a chance to tell us, because I want to get back to this Brazil story about the fact that he has been, George Santos has been on the Brazilian government's criminal radar. Tell us more.
Yeah, I mean, look, his mother was a home health care aide in Brazil in 2009, and he stole a checkbook from an 82-year-old patient and took those checks and wrote multiple checks to buy himself merchandise, buy himself goods, about $1,500 worth, which is a pretty good sum of money 10 years ago in Brazil.
Okay. And so then, I mean, Grant, are there other things that you've dug up or that have come out more recently that even catch your now sort of jaded attention about this person?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a story that just broke today. A disabled veteran with a service dog needed money for a necessary operation to save the life of the service dog. The vet, the veterinarian, referred the veteran to George Santos, who was running what turns out to be a fake charity called Friends of Pets. And Santos used that story to raise over $3,000, and this was just a couple of years ago, to do the necessary surgery to save the dog. Santos stole the money, shut down the accounts, and disappeared. I mean, he's a sociopath. I mean, he is really an evil person.
Hmm. Okay, so Grant, hang on here for just a minute, because we want to turn back to Professor Christian Hart. Professor Hart, what do you think of Grant's analysis?
Well, I think based on what we've seen about George Santos, that seems pretty spot on. He seems to display many of the characteristics that we identify as antisocial personality disorder, or what most people would refer to as a psychopath or a sociopath. One of the key criterion is excessive deceitfulness, typically for gain or even just for pleasure, the pleasure people get from just manipulating others. And so what we see with antisocial personality disorders is pretty rare. It occurs in about 1-4% of the population, but it's much higher in prison populations, for example, where about 35% of prison population would meet the criteria for antisocial personality disorder. What the disorder really involves is chronic rule breaking, norm violating, and violating the rights of others with very little evidence of empathy or remorse.
Huh. Okay. So let's, again, listen to a little bit more of some of the claims or lies that George Santos has said. He said that he went to college on a volleyball scholarship. He also talked about having two knee replacements, not just knee surgery, but knee replacements from playing volleyball. So here he is in 2020 on the New York City morning radio show Sid and Friends with host Sid Rosenberg.
When I was in Baruch, we were the number one volleyball
team. Did you graduate from Baruch? Did you graduate from there?
Yeah.
So did I.
I did.
So did I.
Oh, very cool. We went to play against Harvard, Yale, and we slay them. We were champions across the entire Northeast corridor. Every school that came up against us, they were shaking at the time. Yeah. We were animals. All of us could have been playing basketball, but we chose volleyball because it was easier. So it was a great time. I sacrificed both my knees and got very nice knee replacements knee replacements from HSS playing volleyball. That's how serious I took the game.
So again, Baruch College says it has no record of George Santos ever attending there. We've got about 30 seconds before our next break, Professor Hart. I want to ask you about the laughter that you hear from Sid and friends there. Almost as if, you know, they're in on it.
Well, he's clearly lying. He's presenting himself as a high-status individual who sacrifices, who wins. And I think the reason he's such a successful liar is people like what he's saying.
Well, so that's the thing. In a sense, does that make us surrounding pathological liars somewhat complicit in the damage that they can do? So we're going to pick up that thought when we come back from a break. Christian Hart and Grant Lally, stand by. More in a moment. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Seen. Listen and follow Last Seen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. On Friday, we're going to be doing a show about college enrollment in the United States because it's down and headed further down. So if you go to a small college now, we want to hear from you. Or if you're a professor or a worker or an administrator at a small college, we want to know what you think about this demographic cliff that small colleges are facing in this country. Share your experience with us by recording a message in the On Point Vox Pop app. You can also leave us a voicemail at 617-353-0683. Okay, so today we are talking about what leads a person to become a serial fabulist, a pathological liar, because we have an astounding example, our most recent example, in the current congressman from the 3rd District of New York, George Santos, who, by the way, hasn't denied that he has made up quite a bit of his own life story. I'm joined today by Christian Hart, a professor of psychology at Texas Women's University, and by Grant Lally, publisher of the North Shore Leader on Long Island, New York. Now, it's obviously quite simple and rather like shooting fish in a barrel to focus on politicians. But this serial or profound lying is evident in many other places in our society. I mean, for example, let's go over to the other coast, to Silicon Valley. And this is Elizabeth Holmes, the now convicted fraudster who founded the billionaire tech startup Theranos, and she promised that her company would change the world.
We've made it possible to run comprehensive laboratory tests from a tiny sample or a few drops of blood that could be taken from a finger.
No, that's basically not true, and it's a lie that she peddled for years. She was recently convicted and sentenced to 11 years in prison for fraud. Well, let's go on to the media, because you might remember back in 2003, then NBC News nightly reporter Brian Williams went on a reporting trip to Iraq. Now, at the time, he was in a helicopter one day when he said that the Chinook ahead of them was almost blown out of the sky by a hole made by a rocket-propelled grenade. Now, that was in 2003. But then, 10 years later, when Brian Williams went on to tell talk show host David Letterman the same story, for some reason, Williams added his helicopter.
Two of our four helicopters were hit by ground fire, including the one I was in.
No kidding.
RPG and AK-47.
So to be clear, that's not true. The helicopter Williams was in was not hit by ground fire. So by 2015, Williams apologized and said he'd made a mistake. after soldiers raised concerns about his claim on social media. He got suspended by NBC Nightly News. Okay, what about finance? Well, here's Bernie Madoff, the mastermind behind the biggest investment fraud in U.S. history. He pleaded guilty in 2009 to basically a Ponzi scheme that swindled clients out of billions of dollars. Here's what he said 2 years earlier at a roundtable discussion in October of 2007.
You know, in today's regulatory environment, it's virtually impossible to violate rules. It's impossible for you to go for a violation to go undetected, certainly not for a considerable period of time.
And of course, can't help it. We must do this back to politics because we have a current congressman who's a serial liar. There was also one not that long ago in the White House. Here's Donald Trump, 2020, repeatedly claiming that he won the election.
This is a fraud on the American public. This is an embarrassment to our country. We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election.
So I wanted to go through all those examples, Professor Hart, because it's part of the picture here that we must understand is that have we as a society become tolerant of pathological lying? Are we creating an environment? I mean, you said there has to be, you know, there's no consequences. The pathological liars believe that they are morally justified in doing so. Do we provide some of that justification? There seems to be very few consequences.
Well, certainly at the micro-social level, like in our individual relationships, we are very intolerant of liars. When we find that someone is lying, especially chronically lying to us, we tend to sever relationships. We tend to ostracize those people. But when we look at the more macro-social level, we do see different pockets where there seems to be a tolerance for people who are engaging in serial lying. And just taking politics as an example, in surveys, we find that 96% of voters say that honesty and integrity is either important or essential in the politicians they're electing. But when we look at where the rubber meets the road, what we found, just taking the Republican Party, for example, in 2015, only 12% of Republicans said that they would be willing to elect someone who lied to cover up their misdeeds. So this is when Barack Obama is president. Fast forward a few years to when Donald Trump is president. Now 55% of Republicans say they'd vote for someone who lied in order to conceal their misdeeds. So what we seem to see is that, especially when it comes to politics, people are willing to bend what they find important or necessary in a politician to serve their needs.
Mm. So Grant, chime in here, because on the ground level on Long Island, you had told us earlier that George Santos's scamming was quite well known. I mean, was it so much of a non-issue there that just at sort of having, I don't know, a sense of morality didn't really matter, even for a supposedly sacrificial candidate?
Well, you know, let me be clearer on that because it's more complicated than that.
Okay.
He was not known generally as a liar or a scammer because most people didn't pay attention. And perhaps the biggest failing was the New York media. Aside from my newspaper, our newspaper was the first to break the Santos story. We endorsed against him in the election. We wrote exposés on his lies and his scams. But, and this was a real media failing, is that we didn't see the major daily newspapers, none of them, pick this up. We didn't see any of the local TV stations pick this up. And that was a real failing institutionally. We endorsed a Democrat, although, you know, we tend to be a Republican newspaper or support Republicans or have a Republican viewpoint. We endorsed the Democrat in this contest, Robert Zimmerman, who is the Democratic National Committeeman for New York. So when people became aware, and as they became aware, and as he became a serious candidate, more and more people became aware that there was what people often said, there's something wrong with George Santos. People kept him at a distance. I mean, it was perhaps most telling was on election night, he was not invited to be part of the Nassau County Republican Victory Party. He had his own party in Queens alone. And so people were already getting the sense that there's something really, really wrong with him, that he was dishonest. But look, he was the nominee. And once he's the nominee, there's really nothing you can't do. You can do to stop it. You can't just say, whoa, time out. We're going to replace him. There's no legal mechanism to do that.
Okay.
So he was the nominee. He was he had hitched his wagon to what was a red wave in Long Island, at least, because Lee Zeldin was the candidate for governor and he was a Long Island congressman. And that is what George Santos rode to victory.
So, Christian Hart, I think Grant makes a very, very important point. Media's failing. I'll say the same thing about, you know, we in the media broadly watching the rise of Donald Trump in 2015, 2016. There wasn't enough rigorous examination. There was kind of a sick thrill and enablement. Similarly, what do you make of, you know, the potential complicity of even, let's say, the mental health community, of the psychiatry community, that was extremely reluctant to do then what it seems like it's more willing to do now? I mean, we're sitting here calling George Santos a pathological liar. And those words were never uttered in 2015, 2016, 2017, until, you know, much later in then President Trump's tenure. I mean, are we complicit here in helping normalize a culture of lying?
Well, I do think when we look at mental health professionals, we are reluctant to call out someone and give them a diagnosis in the absence of meeting them and assessing them. You know, to do so is to violate the ethical standards of many psychiatric and psychological professional organizations. But I do think when we see, you know, very, very clear evidence of lying, what we are willing to do is say, you know, this person appears to be saying things that aren't true. Now, you know, what people do with that is going to be pretty varied. If there's someone who's very supportive of a candidate, they're probably going to look at it as being a slight exaggeration or note that the other side does exactly the same thing. So, yeah, I believe the media, perhaps they're complicit in some ways as far as not calling a lie a lie. But maybe we all play some role.
Mm. Well, again, not just in politics. I'm thinking, you know, again, Silicon Valley, that culture of fake it till you make it. Essentially, it feels inevitable that it leads to, you know, the Theranoses of the world, because fake it means essentially promise that you can deliver something that you can't yet deliver. I mean, folks, if you disagree with me, hop on social media. You know, we're at Facebook and Twitter at On Point Radio, and argue the difference between fake it till you make it and just lying about your resume as you head towards Congress. Now, I want to spend a minute or two here talking about what's actually happening in the brain when people lie, because, you know, we're always interested in root causes here. And a 2016 study found that the human brain actually adapts to dishonesty. Researcher Tali Sherritt was part of a team that looked into this. She's a professor of cognitive neuroscience at University College London, where she directs the Affective Brain Lab.
So most people are actually, they feel uncomfortable when they lie. They think lying is immoral. And so when they actually do it, they have a negative emotional arousal. This could be guilt, maybe it's fear, or an unsettling kind of feeling. And so what we see is that there is a response in the brain in the emotional system, including a region called the amygdala, which is a small region about the size of a cherry tomato. You have one on each side.
So Sherritt's experiment went like this. Researchers brought two people into the lab at a time, so two at a time, and we'll call them person one and two. Person one went inside an MRI machine. Person two stayed outside. Then researchers showed person one a picture of a jar of coins. Remember, this is the person inside the MRI. And they had to tell person two how many coins were in the jar. And the second person could not clearly see the picture, so they were relying on person one to be their eyes. But here's the twist. There was an incentive for person one to exaggerate, essentially to lie.
We told them, you are actually going to be paid the most if the other person in the other room thinks and says that there's a lot of money in the jar. The more they overestimate the money in the jar, the more you're going to get.
They repeated this experiment with 30 different jars. And her team found that in most cases, person one lied.
At the beginning, they just lied by a few cents. And then the next time, a few more cents. And then they lied by a dollar. And then by $2 and $5 and $10. So the more and more jars they saw and the more and more they had opportunity to advise the other person, they lied more and more and more in order to gain financially themselves. And they actually, by doing that, they hurt the other person because the other person would actually get less money if they weren't very accurate.
Remember, person one is in an MRI machine having their, you know, brain scanned while all this is going on. So Sherritt says those scans showed what was happening in the amygdala, the region of the brain connected to our emotions, which, as she said, responds with negative emotions when we lie.
What we saw is that the amygdala activity that is related to emotional arousal was quite large at the beginning, but went down over time. And the more it went down, the more likely the person was to lie to a greater degree the next opportunity. The more and more you lie, the less and less activity in the amygdala, because you kind of get used to it and you don't feel bad anymore.
Essentially, the amygdala in our brains had become desensitized to lying. And so Sherritt's team says this is biological proof that small acts of dishonesty can slide down that slippery slope into bigger and bigger lies, especially if those lies are self-serving, as Professor Christian Hart has said. So, Professor Hart, just, you know, briefly respond to this, so that we may be hardwired to fall down that slippery slope.
Yes, certainly there's evidence that psychopaths, people who take advantage of others and seem to lack empathy, remorse, and guilt, have excessive lying as one of their key characteristics or traits. But importantly, they also seem to lack the anxiety that most of us experience when we do things that are dishonest or rule-breaking or norm-violating. And so it really fits that we would expect to see differences in the amygdala, that fear center. So people who are psychopathic engage in bad behavior and don't have the normal breaks that most of us would have that would prevent us from acting bad.
Got it. Okay, so then for those folks, especially if they're seeking power, influence, and money, the breaks need to come from the people around them, from the institutions, from the society they live in. So, Grant Lally, that means you get the last question here in the last minute or so that we have. Regarding George Santos in particular, I mean, there have been some calls for him to resign from Congress, but ultimately, you know, his voters can do something about it.
Look, he's got a 2-year term, but he is not going to finish a 2-year term. My prediction is that he's going to be expelled from Congress. The first criminal charge that comes down, there's going to be a vote, and it's probably going to be a unanimous vote in Congress to expel him. But I have one thing I just want to say is Professor Hart was dead on about describing the sort of personality that George Santos is and how he gets a thrill out of manipulating and controlling other people. And I know of a number of incidents locally where it was almost cruel manipulation, where he would get people to do things for him by a combination of bullying and lying, sometimes trivial things. I mean, he took one local contractor who had once run for office, had him get in a car with him, and for 4 hours drove around the North Shore of Long Island and pointed out mansions and said, "I want you to do work on that mansion," and but couldn't go inside. And that contractor ended up spending a whole afternoon. There was no work. None of the homes were owned by him. Wow. But it was a weird thrill that Santos seemed to get.
Well, Grant Lally, publisher of the North Shore Leader on the North Shore of Long Island, thank you so much. And Christian Hart, professor of psychology at Texas Women's University, thank you as well. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.